At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Item 1, Jobs Day Friday. Item 2, grocery shopping. And item 3, heavy metal. Seriously. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday, the 7th of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Hey, so listen, I blew it. I guessed out loud and on the radio yesterday that the August jobs report would show somewhere between 100 and 200,000 new jobs in this economy. And then don't you know when the number came out this morning? 201,000. So that'll teach me, but it was pretty much on trend. The unemployment rate stayed at 3.9%, but wages were the real story, which is where we're going to start today, up 2.9% over a year ago. Seeing as how it's been almost a decade of Jobs Day Fridays since we've been able to say that, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going with more on wage pressure finally showing up and what it might mean.
For employees, accelerating wage growth is an unadulterated good thing. And it's been a long time coming. Jobs and wages have been very slow to recover after the Great Recession. Heidi Shierholz at the Economic Policy Institute says it's a glass that's starting to fill up but is still only half full.
The kind of wage growth that right now would make me say, yep, workers are really sharing in this recovery, would be wage growth on the order of 3.5%.
We're not there yet. Shierholz says if we got to 3.5%, it would offset rising prices and give workers a real boost in purchasing power if it was sustained long term. Tim Gates at ADECO Staffing supervises temp and temp-to-hire recruitment across the Northeast. Here's what he's been seeing.
Wages creeping up throughout the year, July and the month of August, maybe gather even a little bit more steam.
Warehousing, retail, e-commerce, he says those companies started hiring early for the holiday rush.
And with the labor market being so tight, they're going to have to offer strong wages and financial incentives to get individuals to take those opportunities. But I think you also will see some increases to help retain their workforce as well.
Rising wages are a challenge to many employers' bottom lines. Joe Bruzuelas is chief economist at consulting firm RSM.
How small and medium-sized enterprises are going to cope with that is it's going to pull forward the point of automation. So the lower entry wage worker are increasingly being crowded out due to increased technology. So you can focus on paying a higher premium to those skilled workers.
Right now, though, workers at the lower end of the pay scale are actually seeing the strongest wage gains because of minimum wage hikes and because they're in demand in this strong economy. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We're going to do a little bit more on wages here because it is a big deal, but the next 5.5, maybe 6 minutes of this radio program will also include emerging markets, Nancy Reagan, tariffs, and if we have time, CEOs smoking pot. Neela Richardson is at Edward Jones. David Gura is on NBC. Hey, everybody.
Nancy Reagan.
Hi, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
Wait till you hear the tape. Neela, I want to start with you, and I want to do wages because that's what you talk about almost every time you're on this program on a Jobs Day Friday. Can we now, at long last, exhale a little bit on wages?
Yes, we can exhale as long as we inhale again for next month. Because right now, we saw a great bump in wages, but yeah, we haven't seen a sustained trend. And inflation, we know, is picking up. We've heard from corporate CEOs that they're going to pass on higher costs that they're experiencing onto the consumer. So the question remains, will wages rise enough to keep up with rising prices? And that is still a concern.
David, I don't want to spend too much time on this because wages, as Mitchell said at the top, are an unadulterated good for workers who've been waiting for them. But there is a point at which the Fed goes, hold your nellies here.
Yeah, they're wearing a lot here. This is the last job support they're going to get before their next meeting. Yeah. And they've expressed some concern about wages, of course, expressed some concern about what's going on abroad. And then there is this specter that still looms over the global economy. And that's what's going to happen with trade policy. Yeah. Maybe we'll talk about that in just a little bit more here. But there's a lot happening here. The Fed is moving trepidatiously. But it seems like in light of these jobs numbers and in recent weeks, you heard a lot of Fed policymakers saying that they're going to stay on pace and raise rates another couple of times.
Yeah, trepidatiously. Good word. All right. Before we get to trade, I want to do super quickly, Neil, emerging markets. We had Neil Kashkari on the program this week, see the president of the Minneapolis Fed, also the TARP guy from back in the crisis. And I asked him where the next crisis was going to come from. And the first words out of his mouth were emerging markets. And we're seeing it again now, second time in a month, Turkey, Argentina bubbling up. How much are you worried about contagion as it affects the American economy?
Contagion, I'm not worried about at this time. Huh. You know, these problems with Turkey and to a certain extent with Argentina are homegrown. These are domestic economic policy issues. And Turkey is the 17th largest economy, so it's still relatively small. We're not going to see spillover effects coming from Turkey given what's going on in that country right now, which is domestic policy that's led to double-digit inflation. There are ways to get a handle on that. There's some resistance at the top. And that's why Turkey, and a couple of other reasons why Turkey is at the state it's in. They also borrow a lot in foreign currency. So that means a stronger dollar has a big impact on Turkey. So Turkey is a very sensitive, and I say somewhat of an outlier of all emerging markets in terms of their response to a stronger dollar and the inflation concerns that they're dealing with right now.
All right. All right. Fair enough. We will call you back if and when it all goes south. All right, David, I want to turn to trade. I want to turn to something the president said today on Air Force One en route to, I think it was in North Dakota. So there is, as we all know, and we've reported on, $200 billion worth of Chinese tariffs in the works that the president says he could launch in short order. And then today on Air Force One, he said, we have another $267 billion worth of tariff goods that we want to look at, which would, in effect, be the entire American imports of Chinese goods. Okay?
Yeah. So in the hopper, right?
Right. Ready to go. With that in mind, I want to play you a piece of tape from Larry Kudlow, the chairman of the National Economic Council today, in which he was talking about these negotiations. Here he is, Larry Kudlow.
Lower barriers, open markets, quit stealing IP and technology. These things are not hard. So we're waiting to see if China will just say yes. Remember Nancy Reagan, Jimmy? She said just say no to drugs, and she was right about that. How about China? Once in a while, just say yes to one of our asks so we can move this process forward.
So there was the Nancy Reagan. Jimmy, of course, Jim Cramer of CNBC, Kudlow's buddy. But David, the basic gist of that was give us what we want.
Give us what we want. We've had a number of these meetings with the U.S. and China. They haven't amounted to a whole lot. The president has continued to push for more and more tariffs. As you say, this would be, you know, if all of these were implemented, that would affect everything.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing. I think, you know, one wonders what the end game is here, as one's wondered throughout this entire process.
As you listen to
Larry Kudlow talk, what he's after and what I think a lot of people in this administration are after are structural changes to the Chinese economy. And therein lies the rub. I think that's why you haven't seen the kind of compromise that he's hoping for, that Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative, is hoping for. And I don't know how all this is going to play out with China. You have seen some of the other folks with whom this administration has been negotiating, be that the European, the Europeans, be that the Mexicans, and Canada is still at the table. We don't know what the status of that is. The president talked a little bit about that today. Those conversations are ongoing. That's got to make things, I would think, I'm looking at Neil here, maybe a little bit harder for China as the U.S. continues to negotiate with China.
Neil, you want to weigh in on China or you want to talk about Elon Musk smoking pot on a podcast?
Well, just say yes only applies to one.
Only applies to one thing. That's right. So look, just super quickly, and I mean it because we've got like 45 seconds left, Neil. So Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, did the thing a month or two ago about funding secured at $420. Now he goes on the podcast. He smokes pot. He drinks. If you're the chairman of the board of Tesla, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm thinking two things. One, it's hard for genius to color inside the lines sometimes. And so we've seen a lot of brilliance from Elon Musk. With that sometimes comes a lot of things that are off color and a lot of things that we don't expect and probably isn't good for stock prices. Yeah. How do you solve that if you're a board chair is you get a strong, business savvy boring number two. And we've seen that done in other tech companies where they bring in a strong second. The question is, will Elon Musk share the power and move that company forward?
And can he keep
forward?
That person?
And can he keep it, right? I mean, you've got Sheryl Sandberg.
Good question.
Yeah, you've got Sheryl Sandberg at Facebook and Gwynne Shotwell at SpaceX, Musk's other company. All right, we got to go. But I did get it all in, so that's good.
You know, webcast this guy, but we're not smoking pot in the studio.
Okay, good. Well, that's I got to go. David Gura, MSNBC on the weekends, and Neela Richardson at Edward Jones. Thanks, you two.
Thank you.
All right. On Wall Street this Friday, a little up and then a little down. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This is going to sound like it's coming out of nowhere, but roll with me here for a second. Last time you went to a grocery store, what wound up in your cart? The basics, of course, but probably not any Campbell's soup. Yes, it's still summer and hot and all, but not necessarily soup weather. Sales of the company's condensed soups have not been doing well, though. So not well, in fact, that the hedge fund Third Point just launched a fight to replace Campbell's entire board of directors and sell the company outright. And it's not just Campbell's that's getting squeezed. A lot of packaged goods and processed food companies haven't been doing all that well either. But as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, that doesn't mean there aren't a certain kind of buyers.
At her apartment in Brooklyn, Helen Shore is boiling potatoes on a Saturday afternoon. She's making burritos to eat for lunch in the week ahead, so she's also prepped a bowl of cheese and some black beans. And instead of tortillas, she's using an Indian flatbread.
It's a rumali roti, but it looks a lot like a tortilla.
Oh, and she's also prepping two other recipes at the same time. She starts chopping up a watermelon to blend into margaritas. Next on her list, Vietnamese summer rolls. I ask her to show me what's in her pantry.
I have black vinegar. I have Trader Joe's dried wild blueberries because all their dried fruits are pretty cheap. I have this Al Wadi tahini, which I bought at our local grocery store.
Hear what's missing? Processed foods. Things like Betty Crocker mashed potatoes, Heinz ketchup, or Pillsbury cake mixes.
I never really buy those convenience foods like a cake mix or like any of that stuff because if I was going to make a cake, I would just make it from scratch.
Shore's 31, and it's people like her that have old-school food brands worried. Campbell's Soup just reported a 14% drop in its soup division revenue. Last month, Kellogg said sales of its cereal are down too. Brent Beshore is the CEO of a private equity firm called Adventures.
It certainly seems like no one's optimistic about these types of companies beyond just sort of their stability.
Private equity firms like his amass piles of cash from big investors, and they use it, along with a ton of borrowed money, to buy up companies. The companies they target are often stable but have sluggish sales and falling stock prices. Donna Hittrich is the director of the private equity program at the Columbia Business School. She says private equity firms look at food businesses and like what they see.
It's a space that you can understand. It's a space that's probably not subject to a lot of volatility swings in terms of the fact that we all eat, we all need food.
This has been the busiest year for private equity in more than a decade. And the number of private equity deals involving food is growing. In July, the private equity firm Brynwood Partners bought the Pillsbury brand from J.M. Smucker. The private equity giant KKR just bought Unilever's margarine business, which includes I Can't Believe It's Not Butter. Hittrich says these firms aren't buying food companies for the delicious taste.
They're buying the businesses in order to generate a return, and the way that return is realized is by exiting the business.
And just like flipping a house, private equity firms have to fix up the business so they can eventually sell it at a higher price. That means using existing equipment longer, selling off divisions, laying off employees. To survive, food companies have been doing some shopping of their own. NYU economist Carolyn Dimitri and I stopped by a Manhattan grocery store to check out the shelves. She points out that the center of the store isn't all yellow 5 and sodium bisulfites. Healthier products are sitting there, too.
So let's see if we can find a Cascadian Farm product, which should be here somewhere. It's owned by General Mills.
Dimitri says food companies like General Mills have been buying up brands marketed as healthy and stocking the shelves with them.
Almost all of these natural product and organic brands are owned by the legacy companies, but they're marketed under a different label.
She points out another General Mills product, Annie's, the mac and cheese brand. After years of private equity ownership, Annie's was scooped up by General Mills in 2014. Last year, an executive called it the company's biggest brand.
The consumer still thinks of like Annie's as being, you know, something that Annie started.
It's a private equity success story. And if Annie's wholesome branding makes you feel better about buying from a big food company, then go for it. In New York, I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Coming up,
Capital of Metal.
Go ahead, try to guess where that is. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 0.3% today, 79 points, 25,916. The S&P 500 slipped 0.2%, 6 points, 2871. NASDAQ down 0.25%, 20 points, 7902 there. For the 5 days gone by, the blue chips lost nearly 0.2%. S&P 500 down 1%. NASDAQ ditched about 2.5%. Speaking of which, shares of Amazon off 0.3% today. Apple dimmed 0.8%. Twitter, shares of that social media company down 1% on this day. Tesla, just because we were talking about Mr. Musk, crashed more than 6% after that podcast thing he did. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.93%. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. You know, I do a podcast with Molly Wood. It's called Make Me Smart. And this week we are talking about bias on platforms like Twitter and Facebook as those companies testify before Congress.
I mean, it's a waste of time to actually call these guys in front of Congress because they simply don't have the answer. It's not within their business model to solve this problem.
Check us out. We're on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Behind every successful business is a story. And some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. It's rare that I'm at a loss for how to properly set up a story, but this one did kind of stump me, so I'm just going to go basic. Lionel Richie, yes, that Lionel Richie, has a new line of sheets and towels, bed and bath stuff, hitting shelves at JCPenney today. Now, it's not like celebrity endorsements and product lines are new, but this one did get us wondering what it takes for these kinds of partnerships to work out. Marketplace's Amy Scott is on it.
Hello? Is it me you're looking for? Over here in the bedding aisle. Even Lionel Richie admits it's a stretch in this JCPenney promotional video.
a poster of Lionel Richie at JCPenney. It's about as out of the norm as I've ever gotten in my whole life.
For Richie, who hasn't recorded an album in years, it's a way to be in the conversation and make a little money, says Jonathan Salem Baskin, a branding consultant with Arcadia Communications Lab. For struggling JCPenney, he says, it's a bid to reach a key demographic, women over 45, with a tried and true tactic, star power. This time in the form of a black and gold 7-piece comforter set for $89.99.
It still works. There's some very successful Kardashian sister making a gazillion dollars selling makeup with her name on it to her fellow millennials.
But that sister, Kylie Jenner, is a model and social media star. Houseware lines by Martha Stewart, known for her cooking and lifestyle shows, make sense. To work, Baskin says, the connection has to be relevant.
I can imagine a bunch of things that might matter to a 45-year-old consumer. Things like, better night's sleep. Back pain, noise cancellation, pet dander.
He may be underestimating Richie's fans. According to ePoll Market Research, 70% of people 45 and older are at least aware of Richie, and most said they like him. Nikita Pope is founder of branding and design firm Branding Chicks. She points out other offbeat matchups have worked. Consider the wildly successful George Foreman Grill.
Whether the celebrity pairing makes sense or not, if the product is a good product, then it will sell.
And if Lionel Richie's sheets and towels don't sell right away, at least they have a long shelf life. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences has changed its mind about the Oscars this year. After weeks of what you can only call mixed to mostly negative reviews, the Academy has decided there is not going to be an Oscar for most popular film this year after all, and the whole idea is being rethought. Film purists are breathing a sigh of relief. But what of the movies that might have won? Marketplace's Jed Kim has more on the Oscar bump that might never be.
Winning an Oscar is important for a lot of films because it's box office gold.
The films that have won in the last few years, these are smaller films that got a tremendous amount of additional box office attention because they won the Oscar.
Dana Harris is editor-in-chief of IndieWire.
Okay, so if a popular film wins the Oscar, it's going to what? Get more attention?
So maybe smash hits like Black Panther or the latest Avengers movie wouldn't have gotten much of a revenue bump, but an Oscar for Best Popular Film could have helped people associated with those movies. Joe Piazza is the author of Celebrity Inc., How Famous People Make Money. She says stars in Oscar-winning films typically see a boost in their earnings potential.
Who's really going to lose out here are the actors, the actresses, and the directors, because being able to attach the word Oscar to your brand is what actually gives you that Oscar bump for your future projects.
And there's the prestige factor. If you're an actor like Dwayne Johnson, who starred in smash hits like the Fast and Furious franchise, where you have lines like,
I said no, Mr. Nobody. I'm not leaving this cell. I'll get out my way. The right way.
You haven't really been a contender for serious roles. Piazza says the Oscar title could have helped change that.
And if we look at someone like The Rock, I don't know what he wants to do next, but maybe he does want to do an adorably quaint independent film. Maybe he wants to be considered for something like that.
But of course, since Johnson is one of the biggest stars on the planet, it's hard to argue he needs an Oscar to do things his way.
The right way!
I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
There's a big music party in a small town in Finland this weekend. 10 bands in all, bands with noisy guitars, dark and scary lyrics, driving drum beats. Heavy metal music is what we're talking about. Finland, it turns out, is known for something other than saunas and as the home to the once dominant cell phone company Nokia. You could call it metal exports. Finland has more than 50 heavy metal bands for every 100,000 people, more than any other country, apparently. So Marketplace's Peter Ballin and Rosen went looking for the heaviest of all heavy metal places.
In Finland, music like this tops the charts. That's Stamina, a Finnish band whose past 5 albums have gone number 1 in Finland. Singer and guitarist Antti Hurrinen certainly looks the metalhead part. Today, he's wearing a t-shirt of British death metal band Carcass. He has long blonde hair, arms and hands covered in tattoos. Hurinen and others are recording this new anthem for the local hockey team.
I think metal should be like extreme, really like kick people's asses. But in our culture, this starts to be like a boring thing.
Because metal is everywhere. It's hard to pinpoint exactly why extreme music is so popular here, especially because Finns have a reputation as being, well, reserved.
But then when we're not silent, we're probably shouting. And our language is like clack, 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 clack. It sounds really like aggressive.
Just like metal. Finland's metal scene took off in the late 1990s with popular bands like Nightwish and Children of Bodom. The scene's still going strong, contributing to a music industry worth more than $1 billion.
But the thing is, I never, ever expected that our, you know, our small town Lemmy would be in any way connected with this.
Lemmy, Hurinen's hometown, was recently thrust into the heavy metal spotlight. That all started with a guy named Eka Mäkinen. He organizes Helsinki's Tuska Festival, Northern Europe's largest metal event. It's big, like 3 days, 15,000 people a day big. In Finland, money brought in by fests like this account for nearly one-third of the music industry's total sales. And with metal as both an export and a way to attract tourists, Mäkinen and some friends had an idea.
Let's list all the bands that we have in Finland, and then we can say that it's really the capital of metal.
More than that, could they find the city in the country with the most heavy metal bands per capita?
They sent us an email like, would you be interested in this? And we said, of course.
Meera Pappi promotes Finnish culture for the government. This was a perfect opportunity to boost tourism. So a contest was launched. An investment of $47,000 from the government and local cities allowed them to build a website, make merch, and promote their quest to find the epicenter of metal. And a municipality with just 3,000 residents emerged as that place because it had 13 metal bands. 13!
So I sent an email to the mayor of Lemmy. Like, hi, I'm not sure if you're aware of this campaign that's been going on, but, you know, it looks like you might be winning. And then, as it turns out, the mayor was, he's a metalhead.
In June, the rural community in East Finland was officially declared the capital of metal. Now, Lemmy's actually kind of cute. Colorful houses, people selling veggies in the town square. UC Store, Lemmy's metalhead mayor, describes it as
peaceful and people are very nice here. Everybody helps each other.
He points out a new stainless steel plaque in the town square, the same size as him. It says Capital of Metal, Lemmy, in sharp, angular letters, just like the logo for heavy metal giant Metallica.
Because of tourists, they have to have some place to take selfies.
Some place to take selfies. A key rule of tourism? Flaunt your assets. After all, as musician Antti Hurinen says, Lemmy is
capital of metal!
This weekend, the town hopes to see some heavy metal payoff with the festival called Capital of Metal, live. In Finland, I'm Peter Ballinan-Rosen for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which LeBron James shows he knows his way around more than just a basketball court. His latest sneaker, basketball shoe, if you're a purist, is available today. It's the Nike LeBron 16 HFR. The cool thing is that it's the first such shoe to be designed by an all-female design team. It is also the first, by the way, to come in women's sizes. $250 if you are so inclined. All right, we're out of here. Dow Industrial's off 0.3% today, about 79 points. S&P 500 off 0.2%. That is 6 points. NASDAQ down 0.25%, 20 points there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Our executive editor is Evelyn LaRubia. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rosal. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you again on Monday, all right? This is APM.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.